Welcome to Power of the Tribe podcast. My name is John Connors. I'm the host of the podcast, and I'm also the founder and head instructor of Connors Martial Arts. We're here in Norwood, Massachusetts. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai kickboxing, and mixed martial arts. The theme of this podcast is if you're looking to make some major change in your life, get fit, get healthier, get more confident, then find the right tribe. And I'm here with my co-host, Dan Robin. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing good, John. How you doing?
Have you been traveling at all lately?
I've stopped traveling. I don't want to travel for a little while.
Good.
So this summer, I've been to, you know, I went to Japan and Paris and some places in the U.S. like D.C. and about ready to stay home for a little while.
Very international, yeah. Intercontinental.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. But like, you know, it's always like when I plan a trip, I'm always thinking like I plan 6 weeks of travel, you know, like I want to go here and here and here and here. Usually, I like about a week or 10 days in, I'm about ready to come home. I don't know if you're the same way or you don't even travel enough to.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you've been.
Is that a little snub?
A little. Well, you're busy. I just mean you're busy.
No, I like to travel, but I love coming home. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, it's about 10 days.
That's about it.
Then I'm like, all right.
And you live in a beautiful place. I mean, it's wonderful around here. When you come back here, you really appreciate it so much more, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and actually my own house, I'm sort of like if I rented this house, I'd really love it. You know, if I was a renter, I'd be like out in the yard every day and doing stuff. But when you own it, you just don't.
You got a lake behind you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'd be sitting out at that lake twice a day if I rented a house on a lake. Mm. But you own it and then you start ignoring it.
You don't care. Yeah. Take it for granted.
Yeah, definitely. The TV sucks you in.
All right, let's get back to the tribe. Okay?
We're good.
So you had asked me, what are we going to talk about today? And I have this whole list of benefits of the tribe, 17 benefits. And we've done a few episodes where we try to get through this, right?
Yeah.
I think we've got through about four of them. And they're all, you know, and plus I'm duplicating some. I'm just repeating myself. But at any rate, I woke up today and I thought, you know, the hell with the tribe. We're always talking about looking for support from your tribe, positive sort of feedback. And I was listening to another podcast where Oprah Winfrey was interviewing Steve Harvey. You know Steve Harvey, TV personality, game show host, comedian, and was really inspiring podcast. And he had some great life stories. And one of them was when he was a little kid, he was going to school and he started a bit. And his teacher asked all the students, write down on this piece of paper, what do you want to be when you grow up? Then they handed in the papers. And the teacher was reading them out loud, and Danny wants to be a firefighter, whatever they were. And then she called him up to the front of the class. And he thought, I must be winning this whole write down what you want to be when you grow up. And he wrote down, I want to be on TV when he grows up. And then the teacher just humiliated him. You know, what a stupid thing to write. Has anyone in your family been on TV? Do you know anyone who's been on TV? Has anyone in the neighborhood have been on TV? How the heck do you think you could be on TV? And then she took the piece of paper that he wrote on it and pinned it physically to his shirt, which I guess they used to do back then. Did you ever get anything pinned to your shirt?
No.
In grade school?
Like to humiliate me?
No, just a teacher. Like I think they used to do that so you don't lose the note. They actually, like probably a first grader, they take some kind of safety pin and they would pin it to your shirt like you're an idiot. And like you're an inanimate object, so when you get home, your parent would see this thing pinned.
I didn't have that. I know that now they'll do for daycare. They'll just pin like information, like if this kid is wandering the streets, like bring him to this address.
Oh, and they pin it to every kid. Like dog tags.
Yeah, like whenever they bring him to like playground, they'll pin information. And my kid was actually at one where
wandered off,
and this is in Chinatown in Boston. Like and
so they took your son's class on a field trip to Chinatown?
To a playground. Plus, it was. I know the playground, there's like broken glass. There's like a guy sleeping on a bench. Like, you know, like.
It's going to toughen them up.
And then they left the kid there. I couldn't believe it. I was saying this place should be open 500 years and that should have never happened.
That's a faux pas.
It wasn't even my kid and I was horrified. Can you imagine the parent?
How old are these kids?
Like two, like toddlers.
Toddlers?
Yeah.
That's not good.
And then they said another daycare saw this kid wandering with a note on the shirt and was like, brought him.
So let's take a look at this kid. Yeah.
Yeah, what do we have here? Can you imagine, though? I'm sure they had a conversation where they were like,
good news and bad news.
Where they were like, do we need to tell the parents? Can we possibly not tell them? My only daycare store that I had a really sweet daughter. Again, like 3 years old, like tiny. One of the teachers hit her.
Hit your daughter?
Yeah, hit her.
Oh, my God.
For being fresh.
And it being was like, fresh. Your 3-year-old daughter was fresh.
She's like this sweet girl.
She mouthed sort of off. What was the content of her mouthing off?
I don't remember. Some little kid thing. I don't even remember what it was, but it was something. That was one of the few times I actually saw red.
Was this a Catholic school?
I
went to elementary school and a Catholic school, and the nuns would smack you around pretty good. But this is...
No, this is like, you know, modern day, you know, high-end daycare. But by the time I got there, they said they're fired already.
That's good.
You
know?
Yeah. But actually, I was so angry, though, that I found out later they snuck this person out the back while they were distracting me.
Oh,
because I seemed
right.
so angry that they didn't want to walk them past me.
That was probably good, though, right?
Nothing good could have
Nothing
happened,
Nothing good
right?
was going to come from that.
But anyway, that's all I know about pinning information
that's
to a
awful.
Kid. They just like, but I never had it pinned to me.
So Steve Harvey had this I want to be on TV thing pinned to him and went home. And I think she called his mom and said, your son was disrespectful. He was mouthing off. Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on TV.
TV. Yeah. He was being a wise ass. Yeah. So he gets home and his mom, and they called the mom, and the mom says, wait till your dad gets home. That whole thing. Did you ever hear that phrase when you're growing up?
Yeah, that one's
I heard that one constantly.
And the dread just sitting there.
Yeah.
Then they come in and you hear the murmuring downstairs like, what? You know, you're just sitting up there.
You hear the voice escalate. He did what?
Yeah, exactly. And then it was always the footsteps on the stairs.
Oh.
Thump, 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 like angry steps.
Oh,
you
could
even
God.
Tell by the way he went up the stairs that he was angry.
Dan, my palms are starting to sweat.
Just remembering it.
Yeah.
So in our attic was like kind of a play area. My parents were like, just keep it kind of neat. And we were completely incapable of doing it. Like, it would just be, it was incapable of doing, you know, it would be horrible. You know, like, you couldn't see the floor at all in that room. And so what happened is we'd hear my dad go up, and we'd know how he left.
Oops.
Know it was a mess. Then you hear the steps coming down, like the angry, like, thump, 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 down the steps. And you'd just be like, oh,
shit.
No. Yeah, exactly. Here it comes.
That's great stuff. Yeah. I remember that. The way your dad gets home and you're sitting there like on death row, like all day. Come home from school at 2 or 3 in the afternoon. I'd probably have to wait 3 hours, but it felt just awful, right?
That was the worst part, probably.
Yeah.
And then the murmuring. I remember that, like the muttering.
What? Right. Because you had to be up in your room waiting for your sentence and your punishment. Any rate, Steve Harvey's dad comes home and mom says, yeah. They asked him what he wanted to do when he grew up, and he said, be on TV. And his dad says to him, what do you want to do when you grow up? He said, be on TV. And he goes, so what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
So dad was sort of sticking up for them. And then mom and dad start getting an argument. Then they sent him up to his room. And he's got to wait for
it all
to work out, right? So then dad says to him, what does your teacher want you to put? And he said, whatever all the other kids put, like basketball player or whatever. And he goes, well, here, fill out this other paper and say you want to be whatever one of those stupid things are. And you keep the one that says you want to be on TV and keep it in your drawer. And every morning, look at it and read it. And every night before you go to bed, look at it and read it. So apparently that's what he did. And then, you know, he's on TV incessantly now and for a long time. And once he got on TV, he started sending that school teacher a brand new TV every Christmas. To sort of like stick it to her, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Of all the ways to get it stuck to you, though, that's not a
bad way. Yeah. I got to start doing that to kids. You're never going to be on TV and wait for my TVs to roll in. And she sent them a message. Yeah, I don't need any more TVs. Please stop sending TVs. And I guess he still sends them. But it's that whole thing where you're so hurt. This was a really painful thing, you know, like she berated him in front of the class. He was completely humiliated, and he was stuttering when she was questioning him. And she's like, look at the way you stutter. How can you expect to be on TV? You know, she was sounds like a horrible person. It just made him feel so awful. And it just occurred to me that I hear that type of anecdote from so many successful people where they just went through this really awful moment where somebody just said, you're not worthy. And how dare you even dream of what you're dreaming? And that actually fueled them to do it, to finish it, to go through with it. Have you ever been humiliated like that, Dan?
One long, long humiliation. I don't have a moment like that, but I think it's the same thing. You tell me if you think it's the same thing. Of coming from, I got a doctorate, right? And I come from a family where I don't believe that had been done before. The thing is, I know some relative
of
mine. Some relative's going to listen and be like, I had a doctorate.
How dare he snub me?
But
and then you'll give him that gift of like humiliating and snubbing him.
I think there was sort of not an expectation to go to the kind of college I went to and to get a PhD. The sort of the course I've been on maybe was in response to that.
You felt you were underestimated a bit.
Yeah, I think so. The other thing that's popping in my head a little bit, and again, you tell me if it's different or not, but I think it's one of the main reasons people go to your gym, right? Like you sort of feel like you have a series of incidences where, you know, maybe there was a threat and you just feel like you didn't stand up for yourself as much as you should have. You either were scared or like flubbed your words or didn't.
You got disrespected. You felt some indignities were foisted upon you and made you feel shitty.
You just sort of feel like, oh, maybe I should have stood up for myself more. Maybe I should have fought that guy or should have done something and I kind of backed down or I kind of didn't do what I should have done in some way. You know, some insecurity that eats at you. Now, I'm not even sure they should have, but I think those can eat at you, and I think it's pretty common. And you go to a gym like this to sort of shore yourself up a little bit, to learn to defend yourself and to protect yourself and to ensure that you don't have experiences like that anymore. So I guess the examples I'm thinking of are two different things. One is, so the gym example is more like not a trauma, but like just feeling a little bit bad about yourself and trying to correct that. And then the other thing about like the education was feeling a little bit like you're not expected to do certain things, you know, like and feeling like you can prove yourself. So I don't know. They seem a little different, and they also seem a little different than Steve Harvey's story, which is like this happened and it motivated
it's like a traumatic
incident. But I feel like they're all in the same family of motivation.
I think they are.
Same idea of either people looking down on you or you looking down on yourself and sort of that motivating you to correct it or to prove something wrong.
To prove somebody wrong. That seems to be a powerful motivator.
Right. And is that why your intro to this today's episode is like hell with the tribe?
The hell with beneficent support and love from people. Yeah.
But I guess what you're getting at is that there's internal motivation as well.
Like, well, I think you need love and support. But if all you have is love and support, maybe that's not enough. Maybe that's too comfortable. If you have some little prod, some poke from somebody, maybe that's required to get excited enough.
Do you have something that stands out for you?
Oh, my God. My life is daily indignities. Yeah. That's pretty
on. So they're ongoing. I was picturing you like when I was 12, but you're like yesterday.
Well, I have one from when I was 8 years old, I think, which I think was a pretty pivotal moment in my life because I still remember it, of course. So I was trying out for the Pop Warner football team in Hyde Park. So at that time, I'm older than you, but I was at the very end of the baby boomer generation. So we went out to try out for this team. My brother's a couple years older than me. And I show up, and there's a lot of kids. So there's like 80 kids trying out for this one little team of eight-year-olds. And there's all these dads who are the coaches, and nobody knows anything about football probably anyways. And they go, okay, I want all you guys to run across the field to that flagpole and run back. So I thought it was just a warm-up or something. And as we come back, they just call the herd. And they take like half of us and they wave us over to one side. And I'm in that group. And they're like, yeah, go home. You're cut.
Because it was too like the slowest.
Well, I was tiny anyway. So I was, you know, I had all the great attributes of a football player. I was small and slow. You know what I mean? So yeah, it was just a way to, we got to like start with some manageable number. We got too many people here. And I got cut. And man, that just incensed me.
You felt you could have run faster too.
I would have put in an effort if I knew this was what it was about. I thought we were just warming up. I thought it was a complete injustice. I got hoodwinked, bamboozled, run amok, and I was mad as hell, man. It just cut me to the bone. And then I said to myself, if I ever get to try out again, I am making this frickin' team. And then the next time I tried out, I became like the water boy from that that movie. What's his name?
Adam Sandler.
Yeah. I was a human missile. And my calculation was, I'm going to knock some of these guys actually out so they won't be able to play. And I'll just improve my numbers that way. So I was the most insanely aggressive little kid that they've ever seen in their lives. And before I knew it, I was captain of the defense, middle linebacker, even though I was a little shit, because I would just, as soon as the ball was snapped, run across the line and run into whoever had the ball as hard as I possibly could. It allowed me to tap into my aggression in a profound way that I didn't have before that. Because before that, I was this little Catholic school kid, you know, probably the year before I got my first communion. You're wearing a little white suit and you go to the priest and you confess your sins. That's a whole other weird story. I was the most innocent kid, I think. Did I tell you that story when I had my first communion?
I don't think so.
So my brother's 2 years older than me, and he wasn't as innocent, but he's a wonderful guy, of course. But I realized this is so weird when I saw my kids do it. So you're 7 years old, I think, Dan. Imagine a 7-year-old, right? And you have to go into this little closet and confess your sins to this ancient, decrepit
dude, right? What's a 7-year-old right? done, Mike?
Exactly.
And then do you feel like I better say something, though? Like you can't be
well,
like,
that was done. That was the problem I had. I turned to my brother and I said, I don't have any sins to confess. I can't think of any. And, you know, you go down the list. So I haven't murdered anybody. Yeah. I don't covet my neighbor's wife because I don't even know what covet means.
It's an oxen.
You know, I don't take the Lord's name in vain. You know, yeah, it's all this stuff. And he goes, well, you can't go in there empty handed. That's not going to work. So my brother helped me come up with like a list of sins that we could get by them. Making them up. Said, tell him you hit your sister, which I never would do. You stole money off the counter and you lied to mom or something like this. So I went in there with my fake sins so I could do my first communion. But that was so bizarre, right? But that's how innocent we are. All 7-year-olds are pretty much that innocent.
Most of them, yeah.
So I sort of lost my innocence that day when I got cut unjustly from that football team. But it actually got me access to my aggression in a profound way that definitely served me in my life. It was that feeling like, I'm going to show these guys. And just, it's so powerful.
Do you think going to college was proving? Because you always told the story that very early on, you were like, I want to go to this one college. And
I think so, yeah. And
was it to prove something to someone or prove something to yourself?
Yeah, all of it, yeah. So I said to myself very early on in life, and this is how I defined it, which ended up being pretty critical, I want to get into Harvard. So probably when I was like 10 years old, I said that, or maybe 8 or 9, maybe it was not long after this incident.
And what's amazing to me, like a 10-year-old saying, I want to go to Harvard, it's almost like I want to be an astronaut or, you know, like a lot of
10-year-olds say it. Well, I think that's what
it was. It's not, you know, a lot of 10-year-olds say it, and most of them can't do it, you know. You have to be driven.
You have to be driven, and you have to be lucky, and you have to have blessed with a certain intellect, I think, in order to do it. It's one of those things, right?
Yeah.
I decided upon it at a very early age, and I was completely driven to do it. Anyone I told that I was going to do this laughed at me or said that was impossible, can't do it. But somehow that, I just sort of ignored the naysayers. It actually didn't add to my fuel. I think it might have been just this whole football incident that really fueled
me. If you ran fast that first time.
Who knows what? My life would have been in the shitter. If I knew that was, if I made the team that first time, who knows, right?
Okay, just said run as fast as you can was the instruction.
If I didn't get cut, my life would be even worse than it is today. Yeah, I would be in trouble. So, but that's counterintuitive, right? People don't talk about that too much these days. They talk about, like I told you that story of Ben Askren, the great wrestler, MMA fighter. He had this idea that we have to keep encouraging our children, which makes sense, right? We hear that all the time. You have to support and encourage your children. But then he gave two examples that were the opposite, where people told him he couldn't do it, so he went out to show them. So, but I think it's tricky because you can't play that role to your kids.
Yeah, not as a parent.
Or even as a coach to whoever you're coaching, because you can just ruin a relationship. I remember the guy who cut me, and I'll never forgive him. So
you're not sending him a TV every month or
whatever. I should send him like a deflated football or something.
It sounds like maybe Steve Harvey, too. You're not like, so now I appreciate that person. It's like you still don't like that person.
Yeah, I think.
They just motivated you by accident. It's interesting because then again, that like you said, you can't almost act on it. It sort of has to just happen because no coach or parent or motivator wants to really do that or probably shouldn't do that. So you have to just sort of have it happen organically, like in your life. Like it just...
Unless you're a professional coach or something, you know, I'm sure Bill Belichick stimulates guys that way where they get, I have no idea, but I'm guessing that he might do something like that where he gets people so pissed off that they just want to show him that he's wrong, right? But, yeah, but you're never going to have a healthy relationship after that.
Yeah, and you know, and you have to have the right person too, right? Because I could imagine someone getting cut in your situation. I mean, you had it in you to come back and want to destroy people for whatever reason. Some people go home and cry, right? Or just go home.
Yeah, that's
and,
a good point. Yeah.
And lie down and or there's say, I didn't want to be on it anyway. Or
right. There's more than one way you can go with it.
Why does this always happen to me?
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, why do I have the worst luck?
Right.
I've known a lot of people like that. Like everything that happens, like why does this happen to me? Right. Mm. You know, it's sort of, which is a really poisonous attitude, I think, to take. You know,
absolutely.
Be stuck in traffic and be like, why do I always get stuck in traffic? Like as if it's everything's on them. And
that's not a helpful question, right?
Yeah.
That's not helping you at all.
So you had it in you to do the opposite, you know?
Yeah,
say,
I have no idea why, but
I'm
going
to burst away from this as opposed to like a why me.
But it was painful as hell. Yeah. So I think you have that pain and then you probably decide what you're going to do with it one way or other. It's probably not a conscious decision, but either you're going to fight back with everything you have or you mitigate the pain by saying, you know what? I didn't even want to do that anyways. It's a bunch of nonsense. It's silly. Or like, yeah, I just get screwed. So you rationalize it that the universe is an unjust place.
You've also brought up a bunch of times the broader subject of discomfort and awkwardness and pain.
Yeah.
As something that's a good thing in your life in a lot of ways. Like it motivates you to do something about it or to better yourself or do something to stop it.
I think so.
You know, like getting out of your equilibrium. We've talked about it a bunch of times. Mm. If you're sort of okay, if everything's okay, then you're not really motivated to do anything. You know, you're just saying, let me just
leave things
like this. And you don't really want
to That's the rational response, right? If you're not in any pain, it's probably just to stay there. You know, there's no growth there. Yeah, I think in our society now, we're really down on pain. We don't want to have any pain at all, right?
And so, of course, you're coming from an MMA gym. It's really relevant because why ever go in those doors? You're not going to go in those doors and have less pain, like physically at least.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it just stands to reason. The people that go through those doors are people that are willing to put up with some discomfort.
And probably because they have a greater psychological pain that they're trying to deal with. You know, if you think about it, in the very basic human nature level, the human animal moves toward pleasure, away from pain, and it conserves energy. So the conserve energy part is very natural. So if some animal is looking at some prey, it's going to take the closer one. So we're designed to do that. We're not going to go a mile when we can just go 100 feet. That animal is going to survive better. So that's what we've evolved to, where we're moving toward pleasure, away from pain, and conserving energy. So then training jiu-jitsu or MMA makes no sense at all because you got to expend a lot of energy and you got to experience some pain, at least some. So how do you rationalize that? Why would anybody do that? There's some benefit, there's some pleasure that's greater than the energy expended and the pain. Or there's some greater pain if they don't do it. I think that would have to explain it, right?
I'm thinking of the actual professional fighters that you know. I've never seen a common thread in them, really. Like I always see like they all seem to just sort of land there from one way or another. But I'm wondering if you spotted. Sometimes I feel like I get little glimpses of common threads or commonalities in them, but I don't know if you've ever seen it or do you feel like they're all, they all seem so different to me.
I think they are different, but I think they all have very compelling reasons to do it. And once they stop having a compelling reason, it gets very hard to do it because it is so painful and takes so much energy.
In a world filled with many distractions, would it be incredible to find a way to get lost in your own choosing? Do you love to hear crisp audio from your favorite podcast? Have you ever felt like the soundtrack to a movie or a video game would sound greater if there was a better way to deliver sound? Beyerdynamic Dynamic closed-back studio headphones are a perfect tool for any sound enthusiast. Plug in your Beyerdynamic headphones and go on an audio escape. The Beyerdynamic DT770 Pro headphones are a favorite amongst music producers, sound engineers, and broadcasters all over the world. If you're not prepared to compromise on studio sound, visit www.beyerdynamic.com. That's www.beyerdynamic.com and get your own pair now. Whether for home or on the go, it is the right product for every need.
Has your computer seen better days? Is it always freezing and lagging? Are you constantly plagued with pop-ups and viruses? Are you not able to get any work done? You don't need a new computer. You need Phoenix Technology Support. With just one call to Phoenix Technology Support, you will never have to stress over the hassles of taking your computer to a repair shop again. Just leave your computer right where it is and let us come directly to you. Phoenix Technology Support has over 10 years of experience in the industry of customer support and IT solutions, and it's the best place for help with all of your home or business electronics. From gaming systems to tablet setups, smartphones to smart TVs, even business servers and emails, we will help set up or troubleshoot almost any technology in your home or office. So next time you think your technology's at the end of its life, have it rise from the ashes like a phoenix by calling Phoenix Technology Support at 617-658-3240. That's 617-658-3240, or go to www.phoenixtechboston.com.
I just saw an interview with Ally Quinta, pro fighter. So he recently fought Khabib, and it was for the title. Like, he was a last-minute fill-in because a couple of people fell through. And he acquitted himself well. You know, he lost the decision. He had a good strategy, I thought. He just didn't get the win. And they recently offered him another fight against Justin Gaethje, I think. And he turned down the fight because he got some kind of shoulder injury. And he was saying, you know, I made more money selling real estate this summer than I would make from this fight anyways. So the hell with it. That's very rational, right?
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. But I think once you get to that point where it's that rational, it's probably going to be hard to keep going in the field, you know, in that profession.
Right, because it's going to be hard to rationally justify doing it.
Yeah, somebody's going to have to come in with a big chunk of money. And even then, I don't know, the carrot isn't strong enough for this sport. You got to have something to prove. You got to be really ticked off a little bit and something to prove. And that's kind of what we're talking about today. If you have that, it's very powerful. And how do you manufacture that? I'm not sure. Some people do, though, I think. You ever met anybody like that that just gets irrationally mad at somebody? They create a straw man in order to get riled up and motivated?
Yeah. Well, some of the professional fighters I've known, as a fight would approach, they would always get like this strong dislike for their opponent. And I could, after a while, I kind of see that it would be someone they even liked
prior to the matchup. They liked the guy.
Haven't you seen it?
Remember? Yeah, then they get matched up and they're like, he's insulting me. He's disrespecting me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He thinks this. And they would really work up a powerful dislike for the person. They'd have to get that spark of anger and sort of, and yeah, they'd feel disrespected. Yeah, that was a common thing too, right? They said something disrespectful about me or my abilities. And for me, off to the side, often I'd think, well, I don't know if he was really insulting me. you know, like.
I hope you kept that to yourself.
Yeah, I keep it completely to myself.
Yeah, he said my strength was my grappling, so he insulted my striking.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, no, actually, that was a compliment.
It'd be things like that. Yeah. He says he's going to finish me, you know, and be furious, but I'd feel like, what do you think he's going to say? Like, he's expects to lose, you know? So I felt like they manufactured this anger all the time, and it's sort of the one. And I think they kind of know it, too, because I think later, you know, they'd be back to being friendly with the person.
Right. But they sort of unconsciously understood they needed to get themselves in that place in order to put all the work.
Probably
in.
Not everyone, but a lot of people need to do it.
Yeah, I think that's smart. You have the PhD in psychology, right? They say that pain is twice as powerful a motivator as pleasure. Is that it? Or no, fear of loss is considered more powerful than hope of gain, so to speak, right?
Yeah, and in general, negative feedback is always much stronger than positive, right?
Isn't it?
We used to talk about that for just teaching a class, say, and they at the end of the class, they'd give performance evaluations,
right.
Like all the students fill it out.
Yep.
You could go through and it'd be like, he was awesome, he was awesome, he was awesome, he was awesome, he was awesome. And then it'd be like, he sucked. And you just stop there and be like, what? Someone wrote that I sucked? You'd forget. You didn't care at all about the people that say good things about you.
You just become obsessed with that.
Yeah, that one would stick out. It would be worth 20 good ones. You know, you just... And I think it's human nature that way. Like, there's
Dan,
a lot
I'm worse than that. I must be a narcissist. I did a seminar in my gym with my students a couple years ago, and then I handed out evaluations, and I got a bunch of 10s, and then I got a couple of 8s. And I almost slammed my head into the wall because I got 8s. You know, I got like 12 10s and 2 8s, and I didn't sleep that night. I was so upset about it, yeah.
So you didn't even need the bad feedback.
I thought that was bad feedback. Yeah, that was like, I didn't realize how wacky that was until somebody pointed it out to me. They're like,
right? Like psychologically, one insult
absolutely.
Just carries so much more weight. And that's, again, what you were talking about today, right? Like, one insult has so much power.
It's very powerful. Like, I try to eat super healthy. And part of the reason is I don't want the pain of not looking good in front of my students. I'm the leader of the academy. I want to be fit. So to have a pot belly or something, it would be too painful. And that's more painful than not having, you know, some good delicious sugary processed food or something that I want, you know? Yeah, definitely. It's definitely all pain at work there, pretty much.
So back to fighters. Sometimes you see fighters, they don't tap into this anger or this insult or perceived insult. They're friendly and they suffer terribly for their performance, right? Like they're still kind of smiling at their opponent and trying to almost like be friendly or be friends, and then they underperform, you know?
Right. You know, I've seen in jiu-jitsu, the guy that seems to manage, or I don't think he competes, I think he's retired, Marcelo Garcia, he seemed to be a person that was completely neutral, like completely zenned out. Like he didn't have any animus toward his opponent, but he wasn't obsequious either. You know, he was just there and he's in the moment. And to him, it's all a jiu-jitsu experience. So he would always perform really well. But I don't know what you mean. If you try to do that, if you're going to err one way or the other, you want to err to the point of being hostile, not friendly, I guess, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think it was someone fighting Nate Diaz, or, you know, who's Nate and Nick Diaz are perfect examples. They're not.
They're going to be completely hostile.
They're not there to be a friend. So
right.
They're not going to shake your hand. They're not going to touch gloves.
Right.
And then,
at least till after the fight. Yeah, then they're respectful, I think, afterwards. Yeah.
But I think, I don't know, it might have been when Cerrone fought him or something. And he was like trying to smile at him and trying to,
Right.
But I'm not positive that's the fight. But
I remember that fight. I think like you're not Nate won the fight, right?
Yeah.
And I think Nate was super hostile, like flipping him the bird in the fight even or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was like between rounds, maybe Nate like flips him the bird and Cerrone just looked like, you know, Cerrone likes to be pals and he's an awesome fighter, but I think it really worked against him.
Yeah, maybe.
And I still feel like that's not the example I'm thinking of, but maybe it's an example.
I mean, fighting is such an extreme form of competition. Yeah, I think you have to be careful. You can't be too friendly. You confuse yourself a little bit, right? If you're going to knee somebody in the skull, you can't be too friendly, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that could be tough to do to your best friend.
When I roll jiu-jitsu with my son, sometimes I'll start doing something to him and he'll have like a pained look on his face. I don't know if I'm choking him or doing something. And then my selfish gene, my parental instinct kicks in and I'm like, ah, like my son has this look on his face. And then he'll like try to kill me immediately afterwards. Yeah.
One thing in the gym too, I've talked to you about this. I err too much on the side of friendliness.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like just for roles, like for every role, I'm just always, I don't mean for like my old friends in the gym, but if I'm going with someone I don't know, I'm like smiling at them. Maybe I say something self-deprecating and then, and then sometimes it just doesn't work. You know, then they're smashing you.
Dan, that's like, sort of like your strength and your Achilles heel at the same time. Self-deprecation, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you're really funny, but like you've told me before, sometimes you can go over a line with self-deprecation and it works against you.
Oh, yeah. If you're joking around, like, some people take it to mean you're trying to make them laugh in some way. Like, you know what I mean? They're like, you're trying to be, you know.
You're a jester.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're a jester and like king, it's important. Yeah. And they're the king. Exactly. And that's what I'm saying for me too. I'm like friendly and smiling, but then I'm not like really that nice. You know what I mean? Like, inside, you know what I mean? I'm not really that friendly. I'm not like, oh, it's all good. Like, I'm actually do want to compete. A little, you know, when I'm on the mat, and I do want to, like, I don't like to be disrespected by anybody. I kind of have a little bit of a temper for people treating me badly. And so it's a bad combination that I go in laughing and saying bad things about myself. And then, like, if someone, like, agrees, then I'm like, hey, you know, they could repeat what I just said. And I'll be like, what do you, watch your mouth? Like,
you
what
can't you? Say that.
Yeah, exactly.
I could say it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's probably not a good format for you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like the opposite of all the mindset books that these sports psychologists write. Like you're supposed to pump yourself up. You're in there.
Berating myself.
If you can only get pissed off at yourself, at what you're saying to yourself, so you can prove yourself wrong.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing. I should get angrier at myself. But yeah, that's true. I don't think I'm the only one that does this too. That's like sort of this self-berating about, at least just sticking to jiu-jitsu and the gym. I think there's a lot of people that are like, oh, man.
Well, I think we constantly have that voice on our shoulder that's saying negative things. And we have to be really careful about that. If you listen to it, it's definitely not helping you. A lot of times I've used mantras in training or in competition in order to drown that voice out. I use one if I'm in a bad position, the bottom of my mouth or something, I'll say, I'm in control. and I'm emphasizing the control. Like, they're not in control, I'm in control. And it really works. The feeling of not being in control is a fundamental feeling that can stimulate a stress response in your sympathetic nervous system. And it can make you start to panic and you can freeze. So you freeze is your first response, which isn't going to help you. But when I have that, I'm in control, it's almost like a car alarm that's so loud, it drowns out that negative voice and I can't hear the negative voice. And I say it with emotion and I repeat it again and again and again. So there's no physical space for that negative voice to come in. And I find that really effective for me. It really works.
I'm thinking you have to keep, because my negative voice would probably start arguing back. I'd just be right. Like, I'm going to pass. I'm like, no, you're not going to pass.
Really? Don't think. Shh. Right. You have to find the mantra that works for you, because I used to have another one that when I was passing, I would say to myself, nobody can stop my pass. Nobody can stop my pass. And I would just go, 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 go. And that was pretty effective. And I told one of the guys at our academy to do that. And he goes, oh, but there are people that can stop my pass. He just took it too literally. And I'm like, so you're going to come up with something else that's going to work for you that fits your belief
Almost
system.
Nobody can stop me.
Right.
I'm probably
the vast
pass.
Majority of people can't stop
I
my
have
pass.
A good chance of passing.
That's not an effective mantra. Yeah. That you can't use the negative, but I would, and it works for me. So you got to figure out what's going to work for you, I guess, you know. Let's summarize here, Dan. Okay, so we've gotten off the beaten path a little bit.
Yeah.
So this idea of getting some insult, somebody who's a naysayer saying you can't do it, can cause some emotional, psychological pain, I think that can become a great motivation for you to do whatever it is you want to do. And maybe in Steve Harvey's case, he was destined. Maybe that was his path, is to become a comedian and a television host or whatever. So maybe that's why it was so painful. Maybe if she said, you're never going to be a pro football player, it wouldn't have affected him the same way. Maybe he somehow knew at some weird level that was where he needed to go.
But would you also say, if someone hears this sort of negative feedback, gets hurt by something or stung by something, to sort of recognize this, to consciously say, all right, instead of wallowing in it or feeling despair.
Or even worse, let's nullify it by watching mindless TV or playing video games or drinking or doing some drug. Let's escape from it. Instead of escaping from it, let's take it and use it as fuel to move us forward.
Right.
I mean, there's a difference between injury and pain and insult. Like, we talk about it in the gym. When I'm doing jujitsu, it's all right if somebody causes me pain. I don't want them to cause me injury, because that's just too inconvenient, of course. So, yeah, let's take that pain and use it for fuel. Absolutely. So please feel free to insult me when we get off this podcast.
All right, wait till after the podcast.
So that's it. Do you have anything to add, Dan?
No. Are we all ready?
I think we got a lot in today.
Time flew.
It definitely flew. Thank you, folks, for listening to the podcast, and we'll be back next week. Please rate and review our podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes or however you listen, and please share it on Facebook. And if you want to learn some Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing, or MMA, you can go to connorsma.com. That's our website, connorsma.com. And you can reach out to me on Facebook, on Instagram. You can email me at john@dedumjj.com. That's like the town and the letters jj.com. And we'll help you out. So see you next week.